Welcome, everyone, to ET Healing and Explorations in Consciousness. This is Jackie Salvetti and Veronica Entwistle, my wonderful co-host.
Good evening.
Good evening, Veronica, and good evening to all of you. I want to thank everybody for hanging in there through this series on shame. It's been an interesting time. I'm going to give you the call-in numbers, and I'm going to ask you to kind of hold until we get done with the presentation and then take calls. For those calling in the U.S., the number is 877-876-5227. In Canada, 888-810-8322. And international direct, 530-876-3222. Tonight, family shame, the gift that keeps giving. And I want to preface before we get into the material tonight. For all of you, some of you are listening for the first time tonight, the energies are coming right into your home. If you give permission for assistance, there will be assistance offered to help you identify, touch places of shame. The goal of this series of programming on shame is that there will be a lifting. Now, whether that is over one or two programs, I don't know. For those of you who are tuning in for the first time tonight, when we do what we call the sacred dispensation, okay, that's what they have told me it's called. Sacred, of course, meaning just what it says, dispensation outside of the law, and that means outside of the laws of the planet. And Ronnie, you asked me a great question tonight, and I'm going to defer to you on this.
Okay. Well, the question is, like, is the lifting, what exactly is the lifting, who's going to do the lifting, and how do we get the lifting?
Okay. Back in December, we did several shows on, and I was in full channel, on forgiveness of self. And that was the first sacred dispensation. It was incredibly moving, and it, you know, that was very, very, very deep, okay? This is the second one. I had no idea there would be such a setup to this. I had no idea that we'd do this many programs on it. I also had no idea I was going to go into such deep process myself.
Our leader.
Yeah, right. So let's talk about how does the lifting occur. Shame is something that the processing side of it is being able to identify it and see it in terms of how it's been in your life, how it's interfered with you, how it's impacted you, how it's affected you, and how it's cut you off from the love, from all your good, from becoming all you can be. How it's made you feel small and flawed, and gee, I can go on and on with these descriptions. Shame can be processed, but it can't be lifted. Now, I've recommended before Lazarus's tapes, a series of four of them on shame. I think they're brilliant. They're wonderful tools. And on each of them, Lazarus does a meditation of lifting, and I'm going to explain to you what they're talking about in terms of lifting and who does it. This is coming all the way, you know, I would say to you, you know, you've heard the expression, it's coming from the top. Well, this is coming from the top, okay?
We want that.
Okay, this is literally the spiritual hierarchy of our planet, our galaxy, our universe, and beyond. You know, does this include God, Goddess, all that is? Yes. Does it include Source? Yes. Does it include the infinite, everything does? So, you know, what makes me think that I have the authority to do this? Trust me, it's not me. It's coming through me. And I would say that to you absolutely and totally. I've seen what happens in sessions and how when people go through deep emotional issues, how they literally lift right in, they sit, they just reach right in and lift these things right out. It is amazing to me, and I've had to learn just to, the phenomena is too great not for me not to trust it. Now, I'm just going to kind of tell you, because last week's show was so profound, which was sex, shame, and religion. And for me, so that you kind of understand how big these shows are, for me, I'm kind of toned down tonight so that I can get through this show without doing any more damage to myself. Last week, I blew out my first chakra, second chakra, half my third, broke my tether, blew out my kidney, my bladder, started bleeding through my urinary tract, and completely came undone. Now, that's no one's fault. I want you to understand, and I know the first thing people are going to say is, well, why didn't they protect you? Please understand that we're a planet of free will. Now, this is my process as well. Just because I'm speaking doesn't mean that I don't experience the process. I do. And because my life was loaded with stuff in a very exaggerated fashion so that I could do this work, I also experienced it at an incredibly deep level. Mm-hmm. Now, I've had a lot of help from some incredible people patching me back together. And I'm doing fine. You know, I'm still on the mend. But it also shows me how profound this really is. Now, I want to say this to you all, is that my experience in this week has been so amazing in terms of the fact that I have never felt the love that I have felt this week from all of those working with us. I can't do a session without, in my preparation, crying, because the love is so profound. What I realized is that with the shame in place, I couldn't feel the love. Mm. And so, you know, this I want to share with all of you, because that's where we're going. To be able to feel that connection, feel that love, feel that support, so that all of you can move into your great work feeling loved and supported all the time.
So, Jackie, would you say that this shame is actually a layer in human consciousness that we all share?
Absolutely. It is
so
part
it's an energetic
of the,
statement.
Too. Absolutely. We are a shame-based race, and it is part of the mass consciousness anchored in, of course, a big piece of it is the familial chain of pain, which we're going to work with tonight. And
it's a thing that we toss at each other to keep ourselves back in the bag, right?
Well, it's learned. It's laid in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's passed on from family to family to family. You know, we functioned in shame for so long, we don't know what it's like not to be in shame. And once we start getting those glimmers of not feeling the shame, then we can really soar.
Mm.
And yes, it's part of the mass consciousness. It is layered in for the entire planet. And, you know, would you say, well, is this what's kept us down? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. It's kept us asleep. It's kept us numb more than anything. Numb.
So whether it comes to the soul or genetics or cellular or whatever, it's still the same in every realm of our being.
It is in every realm of our being. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that they were pulling pieces of my second chakra back from the 15th, 16th, and 17th century, which we talked about last week. So... I got real loud and clear just how big this is and how profound it is. So hopefully that answers people's questions. I know, Veronica, you had mentioned that people were asking who does the lifting. Well,
and what is the lifting? Is lifting literally taking the vibrational reality of shame and lifting it out of a lot of us like a great tent?
Okay.
Something?
When those shows occur, which I don't know if they're going to be, because you'll all get announcements, okay, every week about the subject matter for the show.
I want a personal invitation.
Right. So you'll all know ahead of time. I would advise you to stay tuned, because don't miss any of it, for the simple reason that when you identify through this material where you're holding shame, you then lay in an intention to lift that shame. Make notes. I want to lift this and this. This is where I'm holding shame, here and here and here. Because, folks, it's anchored in your bodies. Mine was anchored in my kidney and my bladder. It was anchored systemically in me with other things. And, you know, could I have been healed by the ETs and all those that work with me? Yes, except for one problem. As long as I had the emotional imprint, it would have come back. There's the problem. So this is about, we're in a planet of free will, permission, intention, more than permission, intention. And that's what we're about right now, is finding out where are we carrying shame. Now, for, you know, all of you, you probably check off just about everything it's caused, but it's different for each one of you because each one of you took on a different matrix of experience in this lifetime. So.
But we were born with a certain amount of it, right?
Right. Well, that's what I'm going to start now and kind of go through. I'm going to start with a familial chain of pain and what it is.
Okay.
Now, in every session, we do screens lifting the familial chain of pain. This is huge. All right? It is the chain of pain passed on generationally. I've talked about this in other shows. The projection of God onto Father, Goddess onto Mother, and all of the betrayals and abandonments that come after that. Again, the reason we do those projections is because our separation from our source and separation from the more of who we are. And so we begin it with those projections and then project onto lovers and onto spouses and onto ministers and onto presidents and doctors. So, which then lays in betrayal and all kinds of things. But let's just start with the basics, because I want to be more clinical tonight if I can. This stuff is just handed down from parent to child to parent to child. It is the gift that keeps giving. And now, and I'm going to give you kind of an example. When we do a session, the first session for someone, they want the history, because it gives us of mom and dad, grandparents on both sides, and siblings. And so we look at ancestry, health, and if they're deceased, cause of death. Okay? Those are big issues. They all figure in because they come with their own set of issues. Ancestry has its own set. Health is a reflection of the issues that are going on in the family. Diabetes, we know right away. Okay? Sweetness of life. Diabetes comes with a whole lot of, people think it's hereditary. It's hereditary because it's passed on. People think it's genetic. It's emotional. That's where it starts. Then we go on to the grandparents. And same thing, ancestry. Health if they're alive, cause of death. Now, when you have parents and both sets of grandparents and their ancestry, and then you go next to the siblings, just their sex, age, and health. You look at those dynamics, and it gives you a very quick overview of what's gone on in the family. Because it starts out grandparents, mom, dad, and siblings, plus whoever I'm working with. So looking at the health issues give us a blueprint, basically, of what's gone on. Then we add in, of course...
You mean like the suppressed emotional imprints?
It is, if we have lung problems, sorrow, we have, and I see a lot of lung problems with Jewish people who carry a lot of sorrow. That's genetic.
Mm-hmm.
It's cellular. It's, you know, so we can look at this. What I'm saying is this is part of that basic blueprint that you take on coming into a familial structure. Okay, you're going to get that. Now, people think it's straight genetics. It's more than that. I look at it from the emotional perspective, dropping down into disease. And then, of course, you have, what did mom and dad do for a living? You know, what church did they go to? What religion were you raised? And what were your dark laws in your family? Okay? life's not fair, life's difficult, you know, was it predominantly religiously, you know, was there a big religious overlay there where, you know, instead of mom and dad, it's, you know, God, and, anyway, we'll go on to that one. Mm-hmm. Now, this is true for all families. This is not unique to anyone. This is part of the whole blueprint, okay? Then you have the family dynamics, okay? What was dad's role in the family? Was he the dominant? You know, did mom wait on him hand and foot? Okay? You know, what was mom's role? Was she the martyr and dad the silent one, you know, withholding love? And martyr, you know, mother, the one that did it all and gave it all and then, you know, whined to the children, which so many families do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who was the dominant? Who was the martyr? Who punishes both physically and emotionally? And it's very simple. You start going from there. Well, the martyr parent is always going to manipulate with guilt. You know, how can you do this to me when I work so hard? Look at how I struggle for you. Shame. Immediate shame. Now, the shame can be laid in the womb. You know, this is the really tough stuff to get to, and it's devastating because that's part of the original imprint. And some people have gone back and been able to meditatively or through rebirthing get in touch with some of that. But there's stuff going on in the womb, and those emotional imprints are also laid in from mom to child.
And so they're cellular, and they're also just absorbed, aren't they?
Absolutely. They're imprinted.
Mm-hmm.
They're imprinted in, right into the emotional body. Now, then we go
into... So by imprinted, you mean just that we feel it. We have it inside, and we take that shape on as if it's our own, but it's not really.
Absolutely. You're inside of your mother's womb.
Right.
You know, they know that children respond to a parent singing, to a parent reading. They also... Children also respond to a mother's terror, a mother's guilt, a mother's shame.
Resistance.
Okay. Then we get into parental projections. And this is the... parents project onto children. They project onto children in several ways. One, you become what I could never become, and I'm going to hold you out to this expectation that I couldn't achieve, and I set you up for failure. Because it's my expectation of you, not what you desire to become. You also have the parent who projects onto the child their own shadow, their own darkness, all the mistakes they made, they project onto the child. The child screwed to begin with. This is a no-win. It's a no-win for children. And again, creating, and when the child falls short, which they're going to because they're children, shame. Unrealistic expectations for a child because it's an extension of you, and you're going to get your glory through your child. They're going to become what you never did, or you're going to seek some form, okay, of personal achievement through your child. And certainly, Veronica, you've seen this, haven't you?
Oh, you bet, a lot. Mm-hmm.
And now this saddles the child, and it lays in a sense that they're never good enough. They're never going to measure up. And that can hold them back all their lives. The parent, the silent parent who withholds love. Now, the child perceives that the parent's withholding love. The parent may have come from a family just like that. The strong, silent father who doesn't really show any emotion but earns a good living.
Mm-hmm.
But the child takes that as rejection. Then you have the perfectionist, performance-oriented parent. Now, this is a parent who never felt that they were perfect enough and has to seek perfection through performance, okay, as to seek approval through performance, their own approval. It's the only place they feel they have control. They never feel good enough. Now, what does that do to a child? Living in a perfect... Now, I'm guilty of this one. I did this to my kids. I mean, they make fun of me. Thank heaven they came out okay. But, you know, I was a perfectionist parent. Everything had to be perfect because I felt so flawed. It was the only place I felt I had control, and my home was an extension of me. It was, look at my house, okay? It's perfect. I may not be, but my house is. And, you know, Lord, I mean, my kids will tell you stories of, you know, about how they ran around the house with Windex and wax. And they'd wait till I leave the house to go jump on the furniture. So they came out of it a little better. But nevertheless, it did make an imprint. It did make an imprint.
So this is how we overlay our children's lives, eh?
And it came, again, we come as damaged parents, okay, and start laying this. We think we're going to do it differently. We think we're going to have the perfect family, all right? We're going to show mom and we're going to show the world I'm going to do it different. But we have all this damage, and we start laying it into our children early on. Early on. Very early on. My daughter, her first child, was going to be, you know, a dancer, and she had her dancing at a very young age, and she performed all over, and so did my other granddaughter. My oldest granddaughter never got over that because it came a time when my daughter couldn't do it anymore. She ended up at a divorce, and that child lost her fame, lost her place in the world, and went through a period of devastation that lasted until she was almost 20 years old.
Oh, my.
And so, again, I'm not blaming my daughter. This is not her fault. It is just the way as a humanity and the way we do it as parents, because we're all shame based. I'm just, now, again, this is not for anybody to take on more guilt.
But it's just to say that while the girl was performing as a dancer, she felt that everything was okay in her behavior, right?
She was a star.
Yeah.
She was a star. It's like a, you know, high school football player. Okay, they always reminisce about when they were, you know, a star in high school. Mm. Well, this little girl, she was a star from the time she was maybe 6 years old until maybe 12, and then lost it and never recouped. Never recouped. It's still her dream, you know, to have a dance school or something. I mean, she never was the same, and I watched this incredible child go through horrendous times because of it. Now, is it my daughter's fault? No, my daughter thought that she was going to do something for her daughter and live through her daughter, and not really, but, you know, it was something she wanted to do. She didn't know any better. She came from shame-based parents.
Mm-hmm.
But this stuff, it happens in families, and it's so, it could be subtle or it can be hugely overt. And Veronica, you've seen it certainly.
Oh, yes.
In children who felt rejected, you know, I have a lot of star beings that come in, and their whole families reject them. They're so different that they are completely ostracized by the family. They're always treated as different.
We see a lot of people like that in our client base.
You have to speak up, honey. I'm sorry.
I see a lot of people like that amongst my clients.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And who came in feeling different and were treated differently, and basically it actually would bring up anger in the parents, and the parents wouldn't even understand why.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, how devastating is that?
Mm-hmm.
Then we get to the sacrificial lamb. And you know, in every family, there's one child that's going to be the one that messes up. They're the one that takes it on for the whole family. And generally, will continue to do that throughout their lives. They just, and I'm seeing this all the time. Are you, Veronica, in your practice?
Yes, indeed, yes.
Okay, they just never get it together. 36, 37 years old, and still in and out of trouble, still having problems, still not able to hold a job. And this doesn't, you know, people say, well, it's the role. Well, Is it really, you know, or is it the way that they deal with the dynamic, which they find so difficult in a family structure, especially these high vibration children,
mm-hmm.
that they act it out for the whole family? And I think that's probably more it than not.
A sacrificial lamb isn't the same as a star child, right?
Well, lots of cases they are the star child, yeah.
Mm.
And lots of cases. I have a grandson like this who, you know, I mean, he's absolutely convinced that he came here to teach every teacher he's ever had to teach them how to deal with a difficult child. He believes that's his role.
Even consciously?
Yes. Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Well, that doesn't sound like a shame-based kid too much.
I don't think we don't, in his own way, he believes that he's performing a service.
Right on. Good for him.
And then we have the raging parent who is a killer for children. When you deal with that rage and internalize it, you don't know what you've done as a child. You really don't.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an energetic as well as a emotional attack and internalized as shame. Always, always, always. And, of course, the guilting parent thinks that this is the only way that they can motivate their children.
Right.
And, and here comes the twist and here comes the shame. And everybody out there has parents with some of these qualities.
Right.
Or we've done it to our children. Then we come to the big one, and this is religion in the family. And this is one of the questions we ask right off the bat is, what religion were you raised? You know, and was it really enforced in the family?
Mea culpa, mea culpa.
Yes. Now, instead of mom and dad setting the standards and punishing, it's God.
Mm.
So now you have to deal with parents and God. So now you've got the double whammy. You know, and of course, the inference is always you're not worthy of God's love because Jesus died for your sins. So if you do something wrong, it's now a sin or an affront to Jesus or God. It's damnation. So you've got guilt and huge shame because you know that God knows, Jesus, which God knows every thought you think, everything you do. So you have an additional layer of shame in there that is unspoken.
Deep worry.
I'm sorry?
For a little kid, it's deep worry.
Oh, it's horrendous.
Yeah.
Horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, the inference is that you're so flawed that God sent his son to die so that you could live. You're shamed from the moment you learn this story.
Mm-hmm.
From the moment you learn this story. And it's the way that this is taught. And, of course, my personal favorite, you know, original sin, which says, you know, if you die before you're baptized, you're going to go someplace other than heaven or hell, and you'll just float around for eternity. Now, that's
limbo.
Limbo. This is terrifying for a child.
Mm-hmm.
And what does it do to their psyche? These are the layers of shame that we're not even consciously aware of, Veronica, that are laid in so early.
And they're relentless, aren't they? They're a hopeless shame.
I'm sorry?
They're hopeless.
Hopeless shame.
Uh-huh.
They're layered in. And, you know, this is why when people try to get to shame, they can't get to all of it.
Mm-hmm.
This is the reason it has to be lifted, because it's woven into the fabric of consciousness. It's woven into the fabric of families. And sometimes it's subtle. Sometimes it's like an insidious gas. Case in point, a child's father gets sick. Now, daddy, you know, the child was daddy's little girl, and he gets sick, long-term illness. Her whole life turns upside down. Where does she go with that? Now she can't make any noise. She can't have her friends over. She's no longer daddy's little girl. Nobody will really tell her, and everybody's Daddy's sick, Daddy's this. That is devastating for a child, or with mom, either one. Devastating.
Because they take it on, it's a full responsibility.
Children invariably will take on that if I were just good enough, this wouldn't have happened.
Right.
That's exactly where they go with it. If I was just, or maybe this is God punishing me. Maybe I wasn't a good enough little girl or little boy. And this is usually where they end up feeling betrayed by God, because God doesn't answer their prayers. They're in some devastating situation that they feel intolerable. They pray to God, believing God answers all prayers. And if God doesn't answer their prayers, then they must be flawed. There must be something terribly wrong with them. Because they hear all these stories, either at church or in Sunday school, but nobody's there for them.
It's interesting, because I had a client the other day. We were talking about a very similar thing, that her father had been her great champion, and then around five, her father became deathly ill, and then was very, very cranky from that period until the next couple of years were over and he passed.
So, of course, the total emotional abandonment.
And the impact it was having on her adult relationships was just tremendous. I mean, just such inability to trust any kind of closeness.
Well, of course, because the emotional imprint is there, so she's going to draw into her people who abandon or betray.
And blame herself. This is the interesting thing when you're talking, is that she'll blame herself for that, because somehow she took on that it was her fault that her father was so cranky. And
absolutely. This is what children do.
Yeah.
Well, as I said, they internalize it.
Mm-hmm.
They absolutely. Now, even let's talk about just children's bodies. You know, children start discovering their bodies in infancy. I mean, my little guy would get in the tub, you know, and stick his little pee-pee in the faucet, and he thought that was absolutely delightful, you know. So it's don't touch that, you know. All the threats that never work, and you know, of course, it goes from there. Okay, oh, don't do that, don't touch that, that's bad, that's nasty, you know. It moves forward, of course, in adolescence. You know, for girls, being a whore, a slut, loose, the whole whore and Madonna thing, you know, trying to hold up to these standards that, you know, if you're the Madonna, of course, you're virginal, and if you're the whore, you know, do things you shouldn't do, which, you know, sets you up to do them and then feel shame.
Right.
Now, there isn't a little boy alive that hasn't been locked in a bathroom somewhere, you know, like people would say that, you know, masturbating. I mean, this is just life. Then we get into nationality. And this is a biggie, Veronica, because these kids come in and they're different. They don't even have a level playing field.
Hmm.
They have a different colored skin, a different language, different traditions. They may have different hair. And they have to deal with that in addition to everything else. Plus, they carry in their lineage, because generally, okay, let's say if you're Chinese all the way back, generally speaking, at least has been up until now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're Lebanese, if you're Palestinian, you know, if you're African or African-American, etc., this comes in with a whole new set of prejudice and of being different, which no child wants to be. So there comes a layer of shame on top of everything else that others don't even have. And then, of course, divorce. And, Veronica, I know you run into this in your practice as well as I do.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't a child out there that doesn't feel betrayed, abandoned, not good enough, or that if they had been a better little girl or little boy, maybe daddy or mommy wouldn't have left.
Right.
And this one can be so devastating for these kids. So devastating, because it's anchored in early. And again, we don't necessarily have conscious memory of any of these things. That's the problem. That is the problem. Now, just kids going to school who mature earlier, who have weight problems, you know, I'm a little heavier, a little skinnier, a little this, a little that, children make fun of them, more shame. Who don't dress well, don't have what other children have. You know, children by nature are cruel. This has got to start at home somewhere. You know, this has got to, well, I wouldn't say it starts at home. It starts, it is part of the chain of pain. If there is something in the subconscious, unconscious, that in order for people to feel better, they have to put other people down in order to elevate themselves. And it's so tragic, you know, and the recipients of this, devastated. And the divorce, of course, you know, for the children, their parents who remarry and have other children, they go into financial struggle. Things are never the same. My son, when I went through a divorce, developed Graves' disease. It was such a huge emotional shock to him. Now, you know, that's big. That his whole life changed as he knew it. And, you know, even though he was, I don't know, maybe 14, it still was huge. He's a very sensitive young man. And now, as parents, do we know it's going to create that kind of damage? No. We're dealing with our own issues, but the children suffer it. Now, I can tell you just by my own example with my son, to this day, he carries the same energy that he is afraid of love for fear it will end.
You know what's really interesting, Jackie, is they've done studies that even if you're in a marriage and just very abusive and it's terrible, or say the father's a criminal or a reprobate of some sort and so on, they say that studies have shown it's still better for the kids that people stay together. That's kind of interesting, isn't it? You know, that you think that the psyche would expand when you pull away a certain influence, but it's actually the connection of the parents and the household development that the kids thrive under, right?
I would say, you know, this is a tough one for me, Veronica, as you know, because of my experience in foster homes and all the things I've seen. But I have seen, and I know you probably have as well, when parents get divorced and then mom and dad or mom or dad start dating other people and so on and so forth, and then they start creating other dynamics which can be more devastating, just to, you know, agree with what you stated earlier, more devastating than the original dynamics of the family. Now, this is not to say that people should stay together for their children, because I'm not always convinced that that's the easiest thing to do for the children either. But parents aren't equipped, generally speaking, especially moms. Now, today they're more equipped, I would say, but still not there, to go out and create an environment for their children as a single parent. Now, we're seeing more and more shared custody and so on. But, yeah, it's devastating. It really is.
And by the same token, if someone is given up at birth, you know, to be adopted out, I always see when I'm looking in to see the soldier, and I always see this huge split there that, you know, that changes things for them as well, and they have a huge adjustment to make, even if we think logically they don't need to because they're too young.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I find that fascinating.
You know,
it's getting out of the chain of pain, maybe.
Well, you know, even though I grew up in all the foster homes, in a way it was really a gift because I didn't get too anchored into my own familial chain of pain. So in reality, that piece I don't carry. I don't have a yardstick, but I don't carry it because I don't have a constant. So in a way, that was a huge gift to me. I mean, it came with a whole other set of situations, but nevertheless, that piece of it, you know, for me was probably easier.
But you still have the shame.
Oh, well, yeah, the shame of being in families where I didn't belong, where I was the odd man out, where I had to cook or clean or take care of the children or do whatever basically be a maid just to and kind of disappear. Try to disappear so that I could just be safe.
Mm.
So, of course, absolutely, huge shame. And, you know, going to school and not having parents, you know, not being able to say, well, my mom or this, you know, I'm in a foster family. There are all kinds of other dynamics with that.
Pretty terrifying for a child.
Well, yeah, it was. But, you know, again, you know, I've learned to be very adaptable.
Good thing. Well, you're a star girl, star child anyway, aren't you?
Oh, boy, am I ever.
So you've adapted just showing up on this planet, girl.
Huh?
So you adapted by just showing up on the planet.
Well, you know, I had real strong, my connection was to Father, Mother, God. To me, that was my, and I believed I was being prepared for something from the time I can, my first memory.
Mm.
I knew that no matter what I faced, I was being prepared.
Mm.
Didn't know for what.
Well, here it is.
Yeah, right. So then we get into, of course, sexual abuse in the family. And I want to, you know, we've talked a lot about sexuality and shame, but, you know, here's a situation where there's nowhere for a child to go with this one. And this can come in any number of ways. And it doesn't have to be physical sexual abuse. And Veronica, you've probably run into this as well. I've encountered it where children pick up at a psychic level the thoughts from fathers and relatives that have sexual overtones.
You bet.
And so the transference doesn't have to be in a physical manner. It can be just as devastating at a psychic level.
Or it also can be the absorption of someone else's sexual abuse, like if mother's our father's unexpressed sexual abuse energy is taken on as well.
Same thing. Yes, I absolutely. It's not the same thing. I agree with you, though, Veronica. Absolutely. There is an emotional transference as long as that deep familial connection that occurs.
Mm.
And many times, and I hear it from my daughter often when she'll talk about her life. She has intermixed some of the things that happened to me into her own life and actually
owned them. That's remarkable.
That's
a remarkable thing. It's a reality that is just something we ought to pay attention to.
It's very subjective. Again, everybody experiences life through their lens.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we could line a bunch of children up in every family, but, you know, or even just two kids out of family. And if you have them tell their family story, for each one of them it's going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's subjective in the way that they perceive, because they're seeing it through their lens, which is either power, safety, value, or trust, the combination of those, but one or the other, or one of the four, being the dominant. And so it's filtered.
Maybe according to their soul journey.
Yes, partially that, and also partially from the early imprints as well, plus the genetic imprints as well. The soul journey aspect of it is, you know, what they come in with in terms of their own dynamics. You know, we can go into numerology and astrology and all kinds of other things.
And their drives, like what it is they're trying to accomplish.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
It's all figures in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then we have children who, again, internalize these things and don't tell their mothers. Now, I've seen this over and over and over again. I assume that you've encountered this as well.
Oh, yeah, a great deal. Mm-hmm.
And where the children, and I saw this a lot in foster homes as well, where I was in a foster home with two sisters who had been molested over a long period of time by their father. The youngest sister was in love with him and wanted him as her own, and the older sister hated him.
Interesting.
Now, this was an interesting dynamic to me. I've had situations where children have been abused by stepfathers, and in order to save their mothers, not told them.
Yes.
Because they believed that their mothers would blame them. Now, this is a problem. Because most cases, mothers don't believe it because it's so appalling. They can't believe that their husbands are capable of this, and it's totally understandable.
Plus, they also then have to take action. Everything comes apart if they really believe it.
Well, first of all, the shock of it, okay, because the mother experiences all of this betrayal and all it is so twisted that can actually crack the psyche for some people.
Yeah.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It absolutely can crack the psyche. And, you know, this is something where, you know, some children will at some level believe it must be their fault. They must be doing something wrong, and they don't know where to go with that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, the parents find out later and then feel devastated and feel that they didn't protect their children. That's not the case. You know, what you don't see in yourself, you could never recognize in another if you don't have a pattern for it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't even imagine it.
Go ahead. I don't want to interrupt you, but I'm thinking about trying to protect the children. I guess I'm thinking about that a lot. Like, sometimes it is possible to be more protective of children, isn't it? Sometimes it is possible to be more protective of children. I was just thinking how sometimes people turn a blind eye because they can't handle the reality, just as you were saying. You know, and that wake up is probably soul-splitting because they realize they could have protected but didn't want to know.
And I've seen both sides of this.
Yeah.
Okay, Veronica, I've seen situations where the parent had absolutely no clue whatsoever.
Hmm.
None.
Hmm.
Okay? And then I have seen the other side where the parent knew and did turn a blind eye.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen both. So, you know, I recognize that this is going to manifest in every kind of form.
Mm-hmm.
The goal here is not to lay more shame on people, but for them to be able to see where it sits and forgive themselves, because this is not about laying more shame on yourself. It's about saying, okay, I'm done with this. I intend to lift this. I recognize it, and it's time. I'm doing this not only for me,
right. But
for consciousness as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why I'm really trying to stay pretty clinical on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get into the dirty little secrets. And, you know, family, this one can be devastating, Veronica,
mm-hmm.
where families, if they literally throw down a dictum, this is family business. You don't talk about this outside the house.
Right.
And all kinds of really unhealthy things can go on in a household, and nobody talks about it. It's the elephant in the living room.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of this is with alcoholic and drug addicted parents. A lot of this is with raging parents. And people get shell-shocked to the point where all they're trying to do is survive. And so they don't, and they then withdraw. They find themselves kind of withdrawn from everyone.
Mm.
And they don't bring anybody home because they don't know when the parent is going to explode. They don't know when the parent is going to get out drunk and scream and shout and swear. The dirty little secrets, I think, can have sometimes more of a twist than anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because the inference of shame there is so great that people never feel clean enough to really be who they are. They never feel that it's safe to share themselves, that they have something about them that's so shameful that they can't ever let anybody know.
Hmm.
Now, have you run into this one?
Yes, I have, actually, quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. I call it the dirty little secrets because I see how this can really... And it's generally the parent's shame laid onto the children. Because if people knew how they really were, I have a girlfriend that, I don't know if I can say this on the radio, but I'm going to do it anyway. Someone refers to their spouse as a closet prick. And to the outside world, they're absolutely fabulous. But, you know, different at home. Now, again, this can be, I had a parent like that. To the world, she was absolutely charming. At home, she was Joan Crawford. You know, I mean, it was, you know, literally, in Mommy Dearest. So, then you have, in the divorce situation, this is one I see a lot, too, and you probably do, too, Veronica, where in the divorce, the parent, be it the father or the mother, relies on a child emotionally and lays it on them and wants the child to be their friend and help them emotionally.
Right. I've heard a lot of that from a lot of people.
Oh, and this is just so difficult. And the child then tries to fix it with either mom or dad, or else they become the target for the parents to get to each other. Either way, it's devastating. And it's a loss of innocence. I mean, you know, but it's basically, it's still shame.
Hmm.
They lose their innocence. They take on things that they're not capable of, and they don't get to develop and be who they are.
And it can lead to quite a deep anger. I've experienced that with many of my clients.
Oh, absolutely. And it can turn the other way, where they try to help everybody but never take care of themselves.
Right.
You know, the only way they know how to do it is to go out and feed everyone else's emotions, but they don't know how to feed their own.
Right.
Because they were never really fed. It was deprived from them, because here they are, children trying to hold up a devastated parent.
It's a really interesting one, isn't it?
Yes, it really is.
Yeah, I know of someone who's, father gave her the choice of going with her or him or her mother, and then when she chose the mother, he cried for 3 days. I thought she would just die. You know, just too much. It's just too much for kids.
It's what?
Too much for kids. Kids can't hold up the parent that way.
No, but you see, again, the parents, and this is not to crucify parents. They came out of these patterns themselves.
Right.
This is the chain of pain. And then these same children go out and have children of their own, and the chain begins again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why this shame, okay, that where they believe they're going to go out and they're going to do it differently. I'm going to prove to mom and dad. I had a daughter who walked away from all the money and the limousine and this and that and the other thing. I am never going to be money-based, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We had a business and we worked very hard. You know, we're building it for our kids, right? and so she was going to go do it differently. And now it took her a while to figure out that she might have stayed home and gone to college would have been a better plan. But she became an incredible success story, but she had huge obstacles to overcome.
Mm-hmm.
And what she rebelled against, she has ended up creating for herself, which I think is interesting, and it makes me giggle, because I recognize, you know, we talk all the time that we run the same energy. She runs it out into the physical world, you know, in business, and I run it, you know, here. It's the same, trying to do what's never been done before.
Hmm.
And it's interesting, we had a talk the other night, because she just built a mall for the largest casino company in the world in New Jersey, and did things that had never been done before, and they're going to now upgrade every store and every casino to that level.
Wonderful.
Because, yeah, I mean, this was incredible. And now this girl has no college, nothing, but she's a creative genius, and she ran 400 people building this mall and getting it all together under a huge deadline.
Hmm.
And had, you know, fixtures of things from all over the world. I mean, the contractors didn't even know how to put it together. But I bless her, because she runs that same energy. Her vision is so big.
Hmm.
So,
does she have a lot of shame?
Oh, I think she had shame. Mm-hmm. You know, however, I think it came in differently. I think from her perspective, she was a stepdaughter.
Hmm.
And now I had always told her she could do anything she wanted, and she got really angry at me because she absolutely believed it. And then she said, well, you never told me I had to work for it. I just assumed that was implied.
Don't you believe in magic?
Well, she's done that. She has created that.
Good.
And she has created magic. You know, her issues are more around men, but, you know, that came from a stepfather situation and where my husband and I had a child together. So she and he was Italian, the father, and my daughter was not Italian. With an Italian family, you're either blood or you're not blood. If you're not blood, you're not blood forever. That was a difficult one for me to understand.
Wow, that's pretty clannish.
I'm sorry?
That's pretty clannish.
Oh, it's hugely clannish, and it turned back on me as well. I really had no idea that people could be so unfair. I didn't, and, you know, this poor child, I mean, it was a difficult situation at best. And, you know, and we were all together with all the relatives, and so it was, for her, she had to find her own identity, which, in reality, if we talk about, you know, her own soul journey, it was a setup for her to become who she is today. And she is, you know, kind of, you know, whatever's going on in Las Vegas, she is at the who's who of everything and blah, blah. I mean, she's created her own world.
Good for her. So she needed a certain rebellion reactive energy to get that slingshot going, right?
Absolutely.
Good.
Absolutely. And, of course, you know, plus she needed to create her own identity. And, you know, in her case, it was difficult growing up because she was different because, you know, we had the only chauffeured, I mean, believe me, that's all past, but we had the only chauffeured limousine in town in the, actually, there's only two in the whole state. And, you know, it was a whole different world. So she was picked on, plus she was, we were in a Mormon community and she wasn't Mormon. So there were all kinds of other dynamics going on.
So she had to authenticate or be herself. Right? Or to react against all that, you know, all that judgment is going to push you somewhere. And she sounds like she just reacted by becoming more of herself.
Yes, she did. And, you know, also, you know, we were very successful. And, you know, as a mother, and anybody who's got a daughter understands this one. When you have a mother who is very well known or very successful in a small community, let's say, it's a difficult thing for the daughter to find her own identity, and this would be true for a son to a father. And I see this dynamic in people I work with as well, where, you know, if you don't think you can measure up, then you'll go the other way.
Also, I think that it happens with mother and daughter or father and son anyway, whether you're in a small town or not, doesn't it?
Well, yes, absolutely.
Especially if you're dynamic.
They have to seek their own identity. And
especially if they're very dynamic.
I apologize for that. Made that tone a little too long. I apologize for that. We're just coming up on the end of the hour.
Okay, great, John.
Thank you.
All right, everyone, thank you so much. I think next week is going to be bodily shame, because that seems to be such a huge issue for everybody.
Well, that's a really big subject.
And I'm hoping it's the last, but you never know. Sorry we didn't have time for calls, folks. There's just been so much material to cover in all of this. Again, this may create more questions than answers, but, you know, play with this information. See where it triggered you. See where it, you know, make notes. This is really important for all of you.
Call it up.
Call
it up in your awareness.
Absolutely. And Veronica, please give them the name of your show. You've got your own radio show.
Yeah, Radiance by Design, 4 o'clock West Coast time on Tuesdays on BBS Radio. Tune in, call in, we'll talk about you.
And your website?
www.veronicaentwistle.com. No H in Entwistle.
All right. And mine is www.ethealing.com. You know, anybody who has questions, you're welcome to email. We look forward to seeing you next week, or hearing, not seeing you physically, but connecting with all of you again next week.
We'll bring our bodies.
Yes, and we thank you all for being willing to participate in this, because shame is not an easy subject to talk about. But by all being connected together, we're having a bigger impact than any of you really realize. That's the purpose of what's going on here right now. This is making a big shift, and that's the intention, to actually make a shift in the mass consciousness, to lift out enough shame to where it trickles down into the mass. And also to live for all of you. Good night, everyone, and blessings to all of you.
Good night, Jackie. Good night, everyone.
Good night.